Hey friends, welcome to the Thrive Like a Parent podcast. You know those parents who look like they've got it all together? Yep, that's not me. I'm Dr. Brooke Weinstein, mom, widow, and neuroscience expert on all things sensory and emotional regulation. Yep, that's right. I'm here to get down and dirty on the truth behind parenting, education, burnout, neuroscience, widowhood, and the shit show we call life. So come join me for conversations with thought leaders, doctors, and women just like you who aren't afraid to speak the truth and help you find that silver lining between the to-do lists, shit shows, and chaos of parenthood. If you are craving the answers to finally find that sweet spot between chaos and calm, pull up a seat and listen in as I take you from burnt out and surviving to finally thriving. Hello. And welcome to another episode of Thrive Like a Parent podcast. Today is the day after the 3-year anniversary of Jonathan's death. And my grief story was probably the 4th or 5th podcast that I ever recorded because, I'm looking at it right now. It was the 9th, but I was busting at the seams to finally share what happened. And I wanted to so bad, but felt like at least Charlie, my older son, needed to know before the rest of the world. And I'll go over that with you again. I told my children when Jonathan passed that I made it very clear that he was gone. But I also knew how the brain works. They didn't need any more information because that would have been enough to process on its own. We have a very hard time processing death. Nonetheless, someone choosing to take their own life. And so I waited until those questions were asked, and I waited until either one of my children were ready. It has been 3 years. I shared with you at 1.5 years my story, and Eli still doesn't know, and that's okay. He's asking questions, but we're going to wait until he's ready. And Charlie's been wonderful giving that respect to Eli and waiting until his brain is ready to process. I knew that when Charlie was ready to process the next information, he would ask. And he didn't ask, did Dad take his own life? I kind of was waiting for that, but he asked enough questions of, did you tell me everything about Dad? And I say, well, do you think I did? And he'd say, no. And I'd say, okay, well, I will answer any questions that you have. And eventually he was asking friends and family. And so we knew he needed to know. And that has been a hard road to watch as a child navigates that information. The day we told him, I was hysterical knowing, I just cried and cried knowing like, what was next for his brain to have to process through, because I had just processed through that. But Charlie's doing really, really well, and he's communicating more than he ever has and asking questions, and I'm so proud of him. I'm proud of all of us. And I listened to episode 9 yesterday on the 3-year anniversary of Jonathan's passing, and I'm giggling and I almost have this anxious, uncomfortable communication style, making jokes where I can to lighten the mood. And it's incredible where I am now in my life. I'm a little bit more grounded and I'm okay. Yes, I make jokes because they just come out of my mouth, but it doesn't always have to be light. And a few weeks ago, I shared in my stories, I said, you know, there's so much of my story I haven't told, and I think I'm ready. Part of the reason I haven't told it is because I'm not in the game of bashing. I'm not in the game of saying something so that everyone will rally behind me and be like, F those people. Like, I'm not here for that. The only reason I share is always going back to my why. And my why is I know others have been through this. And I don't want anyone to feel alone. Like, I want someone at least be like, oh my gosh, like, because this is so lonely. There are not many people that I have come across who were in the middle of a divorce, one that Jonathan chose based on me finally releasing. I was trying to fix and fix and fix and do any and everything I could for him, and I was absolutely drowning. And I finally decided to accept and support the human in front of me rather than take on and fix that person. And I think that that process of me saying, I'm going to balance things out a little bit. I'm drowning. I got to take care of myself. I'm going to get some support and finally start requesting some needs for me, regulating my own nervous system. I don't think Jonathan knew what to do with that. And he literally one time like called me batshit crazy. He was like, you've gone batshit crazy. I'm like, no, very calmly. I was like, no, I have not. I am finally supporting myself while still supporting you and accepting you for who you are and where you are at in your life. I am waving the white flag and saying, I accept you for who you are. And we're all at different places in our lives. And the shift was too much for him. And I knew when I decided to start taking care of myself, I knew our relationship would either sink or swim. And it's not what I wished for. And I begged him to go get help and do, you know, take care of himself and do his own healing and all the things. But instead, he handed me divorce papers. And like I said, there's not many people that I've met who were in the midst of a divorce while their husband took their own life. And deep down, I was so afraid that that's what would happen. Like, I was so afraid that I literally was so afraid that I would be here one day. And I've discussed in episode 9, how the word widow, there was so much fear to even share my story because I was so fragile and vulnerable at the time that I couldn't handle any more criticism. I couldn't handle judgment. I was in such a protective state of, you've got this, Brooke. You can do this. Like, you're strong. I was so afraid of rejection. And I sat with that word widow for many weeks. And I decided that that was a title that no one wants. It's the worst title you could ever be handed. But we were a family unit. And I had a husband who was mentally ill. And I was the love of his life. He will never have another. And I wear that title with such honor for knowing what it means. And I explained that as well in episode 9. It means that you have gone through something grand. You have gone through something tremendous. And there is so much honor and respect I have for that word and that title. And for others who have that as well. And that's what felt right for me because we were still married. And the outcome is not what I wanted at all. Jonathan was an incredible human. He was number one in his company every single year from the moment we moved here to Texas. He was a rising star. Friends, family, coworkers were shocked. Blown away, had no idea anything was going on. My family knew, Jonathan's family knew, but I hid it because I hid it out of respect for him. And that's what he wanted. And I'm not quite sure that that was the right choice, but I also don't know what our life would have looked like if I was open about it, because I don't think that me being open about it would have been accepted by Jonathan. But there's a part of this story that is excruciatingly hard to talk about, many different parts, but, and again, like I said a few minutes ago, the reason I've never brought it up is because I'm not in the game of bashing, but I do believe that this is part of so many story that is not told, because somehow we choose to rise above it and somehow we choose to manage it on our own. Over the course of the last 3 years, at one point or another, most was the first year after Jonathan passed, There was blame. There was pointing fingers. There was opinions that I didn't ask for. There was judgment. There was harsh, harsh things said that I endured. Because when someone passes the way that Jonathan did, there is such a hard journey ahead of anyone to fathom how did we get here? How did someone do that? And again, I am not sharing this to then go bash anyone. And I'm not even saying names or particulars, but the strength that I had to find to run a business, build that business, keep smiling and going for my children, and process through some of the things that happened or were spoken to me or said to me or texted to me or verbalized to me has turned me into the woman I am today. Because every single time I was met with blame, opinions, telling me I'm wrong for the way I'm living my life or so many different things, I had to take a moment, process it, sit with it, regulate through it, support myself through it, usually cry in the bathroom floor hiding till my eyes were so squeezed shut tight. The next day they were puffy and red. I'd cry at workouts. I craved deep, 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 excruciatingly painful workouts because I had such anger and pain inside of me for not only having to grieve the loss of Jonathan and our family unit, but how I was also what I was met with. I don't want to say how I was being treated because it implies wrongdoing. And I, again, am not here to blame. I'm sharing this because it was just my experience. And everyone needs to figure out a way to process their own emotions. It was a quest for me to not redefine who I was, but it was a quest for me to own and be confident in who I was, because the things told to me, spoken to me, actions that took place would knock me on my ass. And it led me into a place every single time of questioning, because no matter how much we do the work, no matter how much we own the parts and pieces of ourselves, there's always a tiny piece of us. And there's a huge self-reflection piece for me that I always ask, okay, is this me? Okay, did I do this? Or okay, am I looking at this not in the correct way? And I believe that that's the part of me that allows me to kind of sit with my emotions and decide, okay, maybe I should take responsibility for XYZ and not just completely defend and be like, nope, you're wrong. And, you know, I like to really lean in and look at all angles. But my self-worth and confidence could have been chipped away at. But instead, I chose every single time to rise and come back stronger and to dance through the pain and to keep going and continue believing in myself and trusting myself and looking myself in the mirror and being like, mm-mm, girlfriend, you got this. Like, mm-mm. But the journey to get to that sometimes took a few days, sometimes took a few weeks. And I thought that I had heard it all. I thought that I had moved through it all by year three. And I was so prepared for yesterday. I felt really good going into yesterday until I got a message out of the blue that I was not expecting. And it knocked me on my ass once again. More opinions, more pointing fingers, more blame. And what I am really proud of is through this experience, I wouldn't react. It, like I said, mostly would happen in year one. I would take time to process it, and then I would respond. And every time I would respond with boundaries of steel and request my boundaries and say, this is a boundary. If you'd like to talk about those boundaries further, I'm more than happy to talk to you about them. I expressed everything I needed to say, and it allowed me to draw lines in the sand of this is okay and this is not okay. And these are things that I'm willing to discuss with you, and these are opinions that are not welcome here. And I know we talk about boundaries every now and then on my page or on the podcast or with my clients, but boundaries are the healthiest thing you can do in order to have a healthy, clear, concise relationship and understanding where the dynamic is at. And it doesn't have to just be with a partnership. And I sat with the message I got on the eve before Jonathan's anniversary, and I wrote a response back, again, stating my boundaries as well as respecting where they were at and respecting that that's where their feelings were. And if they'd like to speak further on it, I'm happy to pick up the phone and have a conversation about it. What I have been through is absolutely complex trauma. It is very complex, not just because Jonathan took his own life, not just because Jonathan and I were separated, not just because I have been in moments the punching bag of or the receptacle of others' grief, but because of all the things I just mentioned, as well as having children and supporting them. Probably the number one question I get asked when I share on my page or when I share anywhere about Jonathan's passing is, oh my gosh, thank you so much. Thank you so much for sharing this. This is my spouse, male or female. What can I do? Like, what can I do to help my spouse? And the number one piece of advice I give every single time is you have to get yourself help. You have to support yourself because we can't fix, we can only support. And we have to release the extraordinary amount of energy that it takes to attempt to fix or support someone in that situation and give a sliver of it to ourselves. And most of the time I find that the ones in this situation are not supporting themselves because they're so stressed out or they're so exhausted from supporting the one who's down and out. It is okay to support yourself. You need it just as much as they do. If I could give you the secret sauce, I believe Jonathan would still be alive because I tried for over a decade and I was extremely worried that this is where we would land. Now, I'm not saying that I'm this miracle worker that kept Jonathan alive for 10 years plus, but I do believe that I gave it every shot I had. And as I listen back to episode 9, I said, I was a damn good wife. And I think that that was my simple, easy one-liner way of saying I busted my ass to help him and support him while taking care of the kids, while owning another business for a good portion of our marriage. But I knew I also needed to take care of myself. And when I explained in episode 9 the fear behind sharing my story of Jonathan's, our loss, I said, it's like that Grey's Anatomy scene where, you know, you just get married or you just get engaged and then, you know, you're on the other side of the window and you get the news from the doctor that your partner has just been diagnosed with a terminal illness and you'll be stuck in the hospital for months and you give the doctor the ring and you say, peace out, I'm going, you know, going to Costa Rica. It's not what I did. And I think that there was so much fear of judgment at the time. And I'm a much stronger person today, 3 years later, than I am at year 1.5 when I did that podcast. Yesterday was hard. Yesterday was hard for many reasons. It brought me back to the place of processing and questioning and checking in and making sure and taking re-ownership of who I am and reminding myself of the strong human that I am and reminding myself that I get to decide how my life goes. I get to decide what I share. I get to decide. I'm the only one that gets to decide if I'm doing anything wrong or not. I'm the one that gets to decide if I'm living in integrity with myself and authenticity and all the things. I get to decide. No one else. especially if I didn't ask that person's opinion, and especially if that person doesn't have a daily presence in my life. So what did I do yesterday? What does a day like that look like? I did a lot of self-care and I did a lot of regulating. I woke up, got a massage. That's the only time they had. Came home, saw a client, took some time for me, read through all of your comments that were from my post that were very supportive. And as I was reading through them, I told myself, wow, I didn't realize this would be so supportive. It feels really good. Thank you all. Really from the bottom of my heart, thank you. I read every single one. It is sometimes really hard to see a number, but also not know all of you at the same time. So thank you for supporting me yesterday. And then I went on a walk. Went on a walk and I listened and I rocked out to my favorite music and I switched between playlists. I even went to the layered playlist that I've made for you all. Listened to some of those. Got some hits of dopamine. Danced while walking, shaking my booty. Enjoyed the fresh sun. Continued to process through all the thoughts and feelings, especially of what was brought to my attention the night before. And I was able to get back up on the horse and really feel good after my walk. I felt so alive while on my walk. And that is what the power of supporting yourself, taking time for yourself, regulating, slowing down, giving yourself the self-care that you need. That is what the power of that is. It is at its core mental health. I made sure I was in a really great place before the kids got home from school. We don't make it a big deal. They do not know specifically what day it is. There's just no need for that. We talk about John's birthday. We don't need to talk about the day that Jonathan passed. And so the rest of the evening, I made it through. But there was this heaviness of, and I know you've done it before for your children, of you just smile or you just keep going, even though there's other things going on deep down inside. And it's heartbreaking that a day like that even exists. It's heartbreaking to watch Charlie get his first hit in baseball of the season last night and get the Golden Glove as accolades, and also be reminded that his dad made a choice to not be there for that. And then I look over at my partner, Carter, and I feel so grateful that someone is there to celebrate that for my children. And it can be both, but it's a day that you somewhat have to prepare for, of like, okay, we're going to get through this. And it's a day that you exhale when it's over. And I could not be more grateful to all of your support. I could not be more grateful to all of my friends who reached out. I could not be more grateful for Carter. I am so incredibly lucky to have someone in my life who supports me and loves me and loves the boys. And it's a special kind of human he is. And anyone else who supports another widow, it is a special kind of breed. And now what I'd like to end on is, while giving you some heavy bits and more detail and parts of my story and my journey, what I want to kind of end on is where I'm at in the totality of my grief process. I believe that year one, and I share this with any client who is moving through the grief process, I believe that year one is fight or flight. Even me knowing what I know, and I'm telling you, I regulated hard, like hard as fuck the first year. How do I feel? Where do I feel in my body? What do I need? How do I go get it? What do I do? Did it like over and over and over and over. I did it up. Like I did it up. And even looking back at 3 weeks to 3 months and 6 months, at like looking back at that year, my body was still in shock. My body was still in fight or flight mode. And I supported that fight or flight the best that I could. And I'm proud of that year. I believe that year two, and I've explained this before, but I believe that year two is harder than year one because the dust begins to settle in a really hard way. Your body has released a lot of the cortisol levels. Your body is not in fight or flight as much anymore. And so the same or similar way that I said and explained to you, I only gave my kids certain information, the information they needed to know, and waited until they asked questions to give them more information, knowing that their brain was ready to process it. My brain did the same. Your brain will do the same through any type of healing that you're going through, any type of grief. It doesn't have to be the loss of a spouse, any type of grief. My brain processed through year two a lot that it wasn't ready to process through at year one. And that was some hard stuff. And that's why the dust was settling in a really hard way, because I could feel us all coming down and settling in. But there was so much emotion, and there was so much sadness, and there was so much even still anger. And I just had to feel it. I just had to feel it. And when I did my wrap up of year two, I was like, oh, I'm coming for you, year three. Like Stella's getting her groove back. I was like ready for it. I was like, this is it. This is my year. Mama's getting back. I'm getting back to me. That's not what happened. And I think that it's a testament to grief and mourning never goes away, but your body and brain learns to live with it. And there's this awesome depiction of it. It's like there's two balls in a jar, and the ball in both jars stay the same. The ball doesn't get smaller. The grief never gets smaller, but the jar gets bigger because your brain and body learns to live with this information. And that's very much what year three was. Now, don't get me wrong. I saw my spark in many different ways come back in many different moments. And I look for that spark all the time. And it shows up. And I'm proud of that spark. But this is an ever-evolving journey of life, because something like this does change you and impacts who you are. But I, even going through all of this, even having fingers pointed at me and opinions given and getting surprising text messages two nights ago that I need to process through, I am proud of the person I am for having the strength to remind myself who I am. I'm almost, okay, well, no, it's been about 20, 48 hours, but I'm not like grateful for the opportunity to remind myself. Like I'll be there in like a day or two. Like I'll be so grateful that that text message happened, because I will say thank you for giving me the chance. And I felt it on my walk yesterday. I was literally saying it. Thank you for giving me the chance to remind myself how strong I really am. Thank you for reminding me that I am proud of the human that I am and how I stand strong in my vulnerability, as well as my authenticity, and as well as my convictions of what I want my life to look like. And knowing that I get to decide, that is part of sensory and emotional regulation, which when people sign up to work with us, I don't think they really realize that that's what they're going to get. But you know, there's this external facade that we all show ourselves to be. And there's this internal voice within us that we fight against constantly to push down. And I truly believe that sensory and emotional regulation is finally deciding to listen to that internal voice and decide that that external facade and the behaviors and language of how we are behaving, those are just compensatory strategies to try and protect us from allowing anyone to truly see who we deep are down inside, the internal version of ourself. But the internal version of yourself is who you actually are, who you're meant to be, and the most beautiful person. And I am so incredibly proud of shedding the layers of the external facade that I used to have many, many years ago. And I'm grateful for the trials and tribulations that I've gone through with this particular journey that has forced me to look so deep within myself and say, I'm not going anywhere, and take ownership and pride and value in the phrase, I matter. It's okay for others to feel the way they do. That's why we're not going on a bashing thing here. That's the way they feel. That's their own journey. Maybe it's unresolved grief for them. I could kick and fight and defend. I did that. Oh, buddy, I did that years ago. But once you wave the white flag, and instead of defending and fighting, you just look internally Everything is right there inside of you, but you must be willing to listen. You must be willing to get vulnerable with yourself and move through that process of sensory and emotional regulation. You know, I am big on threes. If you've listened to this podcast for a while, that's why I was like, you're one, you're two, you're three. I know what it's going to be. I am not deciding what year four is going to look like. I couldn't predict it even if I tried. And I think that that in itself is a huge win for me, of just simply acceptance of this journey and being okay with the ride along the way, being okay that the self-discovery happens from a journey like this. I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank you for accepting me as I am. I know I've told you this before, but I want to thank you for your trust. Whether you've been a client or not, if you are taking time out of your day to look at my page or my YouTube channel or listen to my podcast, or you've done any of my on-demand courses, or you've worked with me in the past, or you're working with me now, I think one of the reasons that trust is so important to me, and it means so much to me that you and each and every one of you trust me, which is why I work so incredibly hard to be as honest of a business as possible, is I've been challenged in my life many times for who I am and what I stand for and why I do the things I do. Or even if I'm a, you know, good person, when you are blamed for another life, you have to sit there for a second and question yourself. And so trust in every single one of you being here means literally, like I can't even put it into words, means more to me than you will ever know. I have not built any of this for validation of who I am. Quite the opposite. I have built this with such discomfort because I chose to do this in the most authentic way of like, you are going to be yourself. You are going to show up unapologetically. You are going to say the hard things. You are going to tell the truth. You are going to give the hard information. You are going to be you, whether people like it or not. Well, that's not easy. But I made that commitment to myself. And it speaks volumes that you are still here on this journey with me. So I'm going to give myself a congrats to being 3 years on this journey, for making it through some hard pieces of the journey. And I look forward to what this next year brings. So until next time, XOXO, Dr. B.